here on, you have my number, right?
I have your cell phone.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for your attention. I just mentioned we're going to get quite a bit smaller scale, in fact, real small scale, compared to what you've seen earlier this morning. There are several authors on the title page there, and I would just like to acknowledge a young fellow, Leonel Romero, who's a postdoc at Scripps, and Leonel's been a real help in doing this particular piece of work. I'm going to talk about some work we've been pursuing for a pretty long time, and I think it's interesting. Our particular thread in ITOP is small scale, and we just have a little tiny slice of science we'd like to discuss, and we're interested in the particular idea, do waves matter, okay? Do surface waves, big giant storms make, do they play any role in how the ocean mixes? Pretty simple, focused question. We're interested in how the ocean boundary layer then works in the presence of all these time-varying wind, wave fields, inertial currents. And we're going to try to be brave and look at how the ocean boundary layer evolves in the cold wind. Our approach is quite a bit different than the large-scale weather models you've seen earlier this morning. Okay, we're going to use turbulence resolving LAS, but we're going to have wave effects. We have a pretty nice fine mesh calculation. We're going to do very long for us anyways. Time integration is about 70 physical hours. Okay. We didn't have storms to play with because you guys were measuring them. So the storm we've been working with is an older sea blast storm, Hurricane Francis. Okay, so we're going to take Hurricane Francis winds. Okay, we're going to do some idealized calculations. We're going to calculate our wave fields from Wave Watch 3. Okay. The idea, we're going to do LES, but we're going to stick wave effects in it. Okay. The idea is not generally familiar to you, but it relies on a piece of very nice theoretical mathematics. Okay. It's Craig Leibovich asymptotics. When you go through that particular piece of mathematics, you get an extra term pops out. So it's like regular momentum equations, when you end up with one, several terms, but one in particular, very important term. Sid called this a long time ago. He called it a vortex force. Okay. Ends up, that's U Stokes cross omega, where U Stokes is the Stokes drift of the wave field, and omega is the result vorticity. So, we just look out. Oops, back, oops. Just click on the blue. There we go. I thought I would just give you a little cartoon to show you what Stokes drift actually is. Okay? For a pure wave motion, it's the average Lagrangian velocity following the fluid particle. So we take a fluid particle right here, and if you watch where it goes in time, even though the waves are just purely oscillatory, it drifts downstream. Okay? That net drift, how far it goes in a certain amount of time, defines that speed. And it decays exponentially, that's the Stokes drift of the wave field. That's the extra term that we're going to have in our equations, okay, that's going to do really interesting things. Okay, so the thing is, hurricane winds in waves are much more complicated than the example I just showed you. Okay. So what Leonel has done, we've taken Hurricane Francis winds, okay, so here's just a this is plotted as a hub viewer diagram. Okay, so storm propagating left to right, times at the bottom, t equals zeros, maximum winds. Okay, so those that's the wind field we input. It's maximum on the resonant right-hand side of the storm. Okay, 50 meters per second. Okay, well now I've calculated a new quantity. Okay, based on those Wave Watch 3 wave fields, and it's shown in the bottom. This is the Stokes drift magnitude. This is the extra term we're going to stick in our equations. Okay. Well, already it's kind of interesting because the slope, the magnitude of it, about 0.7 meters per second, this is a vector, okay? Well, it's got this funny, really neat asymmetrical shape, and it's biggest on the resonant side of the storm, okay? So, already this is going to impact, create interesting dynamics compared to if you're on this side of the storm versus that. Okay, I mentioned that Stokes drift is a vector. Okay, depends on its integral over this whole wave field. Okay, and it points in a certain direction. Okay, and the thing is, because hurricane wave fields are very complex, okay, the winds and the waves aren't always aligned. What I plotted here is a normalized wind vector, that's the red, okay, and a normalized Stokes drift vector, that's the black. Okay, time is again at the bottom, way ahead of the storm, okay, maximum winds, and we're in the wake. Okay, but this is really interesting. This is, if this particular blue box were on the resonance side of the storm, this is 60 kilometers, okay, and you can see, far upstream, they're aligned, the Stokes vector and the wind vector align, okay, and they gradually depart. Okay, the waves can't keep up with the turning winds. We go through the maximum, then they turn back around, and they go this way. Well, on the non-resonant side of the storm, it's even more wild. Okay, so there's the Stokes drift vector, the wind vector's in the red. They're actually almost perpendicular. Okay, we go through the maximum winds, reverse around because the wave field here is really complex as the storm's turning on itself. Okay, they're very misaligned, and then eventually far downstream they get aligned again. This illustrates how we're going to do our LES calculations. We have a small LES box, okay, piece of just a little small chunk of the ocean. At the very top of the water, we're going to impose these time-varying wind and wave fields. So that's how we're going to do our experiments. We're just going to ask simple questions, with and without waves, with and without waves, what's it look like? Okay, so Eric likes vertical velocity, thinks he can measure it with his floats. So the other thing is, vertical velocity is a very good signature for Stokes, for the effect of waves on the ocean, okay? Leads to laminar circulation. So all I've done here is calculate from the LES, as a time series, I calculated the maximum in the vertical velocity, and I just plotted it as a function of time. Okay, so we compute variance across the box as a profile, pick off the max, plot it at each one of these points, okay, and this is what it does. Okay, this is when we include Stokes drift. This is just a flat, normal wall. So we see this really dramatic effect. This one on the resonant side of the storm, you see this really dramatic effect. It's almost a factor of two, goes up, more than two. Okay. It says waves influence W squared max to a great extent. Okay? W cubed min is even a more vigorous indicator of wave effects. This one's really nice because if you look at the TKE budget, it's related to vertical transport, kinetic energy. So it's now it's really negative. We see a real difference between no waves and waves. Okay. Thing is, what happens on the other side of the storm? Okay, so this is the non-resonant side of the storm. Okay, it's these blue lines. Okay, each time. Okay, so I told you before that early on winds and waves are aligned. Sure enough, we're on the same. They're nearly the same. Okay, but gradually on the non-resonant side of the storm, if you remember that complexity. Between wind and wave alignment, okay, W squared max goes down, levels off right near the eye, takes this big dive, okay, and it's almost equal to the no wave case. Then once it goes through the time of maximum wind, picks up again, winds and waves start to get aligned again, and we see this nice increase. The same thing happens, okay, for WQ. You see this almost the no wave case. This is similar to what Eric was alluding to yesterday on the opposite side of the eye. Okay, so we see this really neat change with waves and no waves, very dependent on which side of the storm you're on. Okay, so thing is, if we make just a simple little contour plot, one of the real key signatures for laminar cells is vertical velocity. Okay, so here you see a nice downwelling line around the right resonant side of the storm, really intense downwelling lines. On the other side, we see almost nothing. Here's winds and waves are very misaligned, okay, and here they're pretty well aligned. Just skipping just a little bit, I have to go a little bit quick here just to finish on time. We can compute lots of statistics from LES. And here I just showed you, once again, time's at the bottom. Okay, here's the, we're on the resonance side of the storm. Okay, so this is the change in SST. Okay, blues, no waves. Okay, red is with wave effects. And most of the change happens ahead of the storm. Up here, this is the, essentially the entrainment flux. Okay, so far ahead of the thing, it's dominated by what happens at the surface. But eventually, once the inertial currents kick in, okay, it becomes an entrainment dominated boundary layer, and the scale of flux increases. Okay, the really exciting part is once we're in the wake, okay, we're down here, and this is winds are starting to die. All right, what happens over here? Well, I've never been brave enough to show this before, but we're going to do it anyways. So here's the case with waves. Okay, we see this very big giant spike here in the lunar, very big spike in the entrainment flux. Okay, once we start evolving into the cold wave, these are very intense mixing events. Okay, so I'm normalizing it by whatever the surface value is. See this big dip, and then it retreats and goes back to the top. Okay, so the thing is, what happened? Okay, so if we pick that big dip in the cold wake here, the scalar flux goes down, dives way down, and then it recovers. If you look right here, okay, right at this particular time, we're in the wake, these are the resolved variances. Okay, so there's W, there's U, and this blue one is V. This is the variance in vertical and horizontal velocity. It's the V component. Okay, so right here we're close to the base of the boundary layer. Okay, the V variance, it's almost bigger than what the surface value is. Right? Very intense, very intense. Okay, and it's over a significant depth. This is right there. Well, this is all really neat, and if it's real, it's really fascinating. So it poses the question, how do you stably stratified turbulence react to abrupt changes in large scale force? So we took this boundary layer, we drove it very hard. Okay, how does it recover? The point that I showed you, okay, is this time, right over here. So we started with the temperature profile that looked like this, and it mixed to this depth. So the thing is, how does it relax back? Is it going to be very smooth? Is it going to be episodic? Okay, so we have an analogy in the atmosphere. Okay, Larry Mark, he calls these upside down boundary layers. At nighttime over the Great Plains, okay, surface forcing gets small, create a low level jet. It mixes from the low level jet down to the surface. Okay, so it's upside down. Okay, so if that's what happens here, really neat. Okay, just to, if you just click on it, Austin. Okay, so what I've done here is I've taken that particular time period where we see this really deep mixing event. Okay, this is a theta surface about 160 meters into the water. Okay, so when we started, it was just small ripples in it. Okay, let it click on it again. If you stopped it right, can you just click right now? Ah, there we go, a little bit more. Okay, great. See this giant, okay, very powerful turbulent gravity wave that forms, mixes over the whole surface. Just click on it again, and we'll just keep going. So it lives for a short period of time, mixes terribly, we end up with this big dip, okay? Big mixing event, and it recovers back. Really good. Okay, so here's where we're up to. Okay, so we've looked at this regime of Langmuir turbulence, and we found it's very sensitive to the wind wave orientation. It's most vigorous on the resonance side of the storm. See really nice contrast between those two things. Okay, things we would like to do, more locations in the storm path. I haven't shown you all the LES calculations we've done, but we've done a fair number. Things we'd like to play with is the initial state of the ocean boundary layer, okay? Larger horizontal domains, okay? And in particular, how do those events happen? What triggers them? Are they real? How big do they get? Those are things we'd like to look at. Medjay is a very interesting storm. Really neat, so different than Francis. if we had time, the wind and wave fields from Magic Bean. Really interesting to look at, to do these kinds of calculations. And we need large-scale winds, et cetera, et cetera. And hope that Eric can make really neat vertical loss measurements. I'll stop there. Thanks.
In Francis, we observed downward velocities as high as 37 meters per second. You show normalized results.
They're more than 20. They're more than 20, 23 centimeters per second. Yeah, they're really vigorous.
I'm hoping Tom would say this, but so Tom has observations from Fernapi. There's a fair amount of evidence of quite a bit of shear-driven mixing after the main storm went by, which looks sort of like what you got.
Yeah. Those end up.
They're from the inertial horse.
Oh yeah. But the thing is, I don't know what. You saw that they were different with and without waves. I don't know exactly what triggers them. It seems to be almost you have to precondition them. You have to precondition the surface just right, okay, then it's going to, that's why I want a bigger box. You get more vents in a bigger box.
Okay. Last question, Peter.
I wonder if you thought about getting together with Ralph here to try to force your ocean model with an atmospheric LES that has the whole vortex circulation set up, whether that would resonate with anything that you're finding.
Okay, it would be really interesting. It would have to, right now, it would either have to come in through the wave field or come in through the towels. Okay, it'd be really interesting.
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
Our next talk will be REM sleep and turbulence and entrainment.